Now, I know you're really not supposed to pick your favorite prophets. You're supposed to love them all the same. But after reading this passage from Hosea, it is quite tempting, because the prophet reminds us that the enduring, steadfast love of God is found in the Old Testament as well, saying, "How can I give you up?" Ephraim, another name Hosea used for Israel. "How can I hand you over, O Israel? How can I make you like Admah or Zeboam, two cities that had been destroyed? My heart recoils within me. My compassion grows warm and tender. I will not execute my fierce anger. I will not again destroy Ephraim, for I am God and no mortal, the Holy One in your midst, and I will not come in wrath." It reminds us of the enduring grace of God that we find in the Old Testament, reminding us of all those other places that say the same thing, like after the flood in Genesis, where it says, "I will never again curse the ground because of humankind." Or in Exodus 34, "God is merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness." Or in 2 Kings, "The Lord was gracious to them and had compassion on them. He turns towards them because of his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Or in Psalm 51, "Have mercy on me, O God, according to your steadfast love." That Hosea reminds us of the enduring grace of God, which is as old as creation itself. It holds us and calls to us, bringing mercy and grace around each corner. It paints God as a loving parent, caring for a child. As it says, "When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son." That God cannot let go of Israel in the same way that a loving parent cannot let go of a hurting child. But Hosea is also honest, saying that the more God called to Israel, the more the people went away. That there are those frustrating moments caring for children, like when you come home and you see that look on the babysitter's face. Even though you gave the speech to your children before leaving the house, and you brace yourself for what you're about to hear, that the babysitter was up in the kitchen fixing dinner for everyone when your oldest son was down in the playroom all by himself, practicing golf inside, using that large, red, oversized plastic driver, teeing off on chocolate chip cookies. Or so my mom tells the story. It can be described as loving frustration. Like when you lose your child in a crowd, you look down and she was right there a second ago, but when you looked up, she's missing, and that frantic panic grips your soul. And you start running around, not even thinking straight, calling out her name, trying to find her. And when you finally do, the first thing you do is hug her tighter than she has ever been hugged. But then you look her in the eye with what can only be described as the verge of anger, and you say, "Never do that to me again." that in this life, even with those closest to us that we love with every ounce of who we are, there is frustration. So we are called to practice compassion. That compassion is like a Swiss Army knife. It's always good to have with you, and it is useful in all manner of circumstances. Called to show compassion to those closest to us and those that we meet along the way in hard and challenging ways. The psalmist in Psalm 107 describes such challenges as like wandering through the desert. It's hot and dry. We are looking for any sign of relief or assistance because we are hungry and thirsty. And every now and then we look up and see a mirage, palm tree, beach chair, pool of water. But that easy solution turns out to be more sand. The harder solution that calls us to work through our frustration is the compassion of God, calling forth more patience, empathy, and concern. The Apostle Paul gives us some practical advice, saying, put on the clothes of a new life, which is always marked by compassion. It's practical because what we wear does have an effect on us. Now, I don't mean that the clothes make the person makes the clothes, but what we wear does affect us. Like that old, beloved, worn-out t-shirt we still have from college. All the lettering is faded away. It has more holes than we care to admit, and we thought about throwing it away countless times. But every time we put it on, a flood of memories comes back. Or maybe it's our favorite hat, that cowboy hat we bought on a whim about 5 years ago on vacation, and our family tells us that our favorite hat shouldn't even make the top 10. But every time we wear it, it reminds us we can still be a little bit spontaneous. That what we wear affects us. And we can put on the clothes of compassion and let it work from the outside in. It's like putting on a new pair of shoes, which can feel more restrictive than comfortable at first. That when you put on a new pair of shoes, you know they are there for at least 2 weeks. You're constantly aware of them with each and every step. And that's like putting on compassion. That we pay closer attention to the words that we say and the things that we do, to what we feel and how we think, so compassion can work its way inside of us. One difficult dynamic of compassion is that it can be the hardest with those who are the closest. Because we know the pet peeves and sore subjects and buttons to push, and so do they, it can be the hardest with those that are the closest. It's why, when talking about the hardest, most sensitive subjects in this life, Krista Tippett recommends a take someone else's brother-in-law to lunch day. It's hard with those that we share the most history with. So we can break in those shoes with others. So we're better prepared to show compassion to those that are the closest. That compassion is the practice of looking at the whole story. And with those the closest to us, we might assume we know the whole story, but perhaps we do not. That who knows our whole story? Everything that makes us afraid. All the things that we struggle with. What it is that motivates each and every decision we make. That we have trouble articulating that for ourselves. So we may not know the whole story of others, despite how well we know them. And we don't have to. We just have to know there is one. Right after seminary, I remember sharing the story in a sermon of an old movie entitled With Honors. It came out in the early 90s. And the opening scenes have this student from Harvard working diligently on his senior thesis, worried that he's not going to make the deadline or that his professor's not going to approve his theory. And he is working away fast at those keys when his computer completely shuts down. And this was before the cloud backed everything up. So he grabbed the only hard copy of what he had as his senior thesis, and he ran out the door immediately to the library to make a backup copy of his only hard copy. But as he's running through the sidewalks of campus, he trips, breaks his ankle, drops his thesis down a storm drain where it's found by a man who is homeless living on the campus. And the man who is homeless agrees to give the thesis back. One page at a time for one favor at a time. So buy him a meal, you get a page. Drive him to appointment, you get another page. And the thesis was quite long. At first, you feel horrible for this student at Harvard, shackled by this deal of manipulation. But as the movie unfolds, the student develops this friendship with this man who is homeless that changes his life for the better. And as the movie continues, you watch and learn about the man's whole story. That he has made mistakes, he has regrets, like not being there for his family when times were difficult, but he's also dying. That much of his trouble stems from a lung disease that he contracted working with asbestos when he was a merchant marine in his younger years. And at the end of the movie, you genuinely grieve with this Harvard student as he grieves the loss of his friend, this man who was homeless. After the sermon and following worship, I was standing in the back of the sanctuary talking with several folks when one church member walked by, and without any forewarning, in a moment of stark honesty, he says, "You know, I would have liked that story better if the man simply had lung cancer because he had chosen to smoke." I was jarred a little bit. It felt somewhat like whiplash. I didn't know what to make of his comment until later I realized. He was trying to say, compassion is hard. That we might prefer some reason why other people's problems are just their problems. The fault of their own hands. So we can take compassion off the table as an option for us. But compassion resists this. It continues to call to us in the dead of the night, calling us to care for the burdens of others. That doesn't mean there aren't situations we shouldn't walk away from. We should always walk away from abuse. But it does mean there is a larger story, and we should never, never sum another person's problems up with just half of the story. That in a world full of division and disagreements, snap judgments, and lingering disappointments, lasting wounds, and enduring scars, that each and every morning we can put on the clothes of compassion, which are never out of date, even though they are as old as creation itself. Amen.